Well, good morning, all. We are going to try to continue with our saga of Jacob. We are going to go on somewhat of a whirlwind tour of his life. Hopefully we'll end it today. Maybe not, but I'm going to try anyway. If you will remember last time, we left off with Jacob heading out of Dodge at the request of his mother. After all, he had been part of a plot with his mother to deceive Isaac into blessing him. And it worked. But if you'll start with me now in Genesis chapter 27, we will pick up the story. Esau finds out about it, obviously. And in verse 41 of Genesis 27, he reacts somewhat violently. You'll notice, "And Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, 'The days of mourning for my father are at hand. Then I will kill my brother Jacob.'" And as I commented, such brotherly love. Rebekah hears it. She's got to get her son out of there. But she just can't send him away, so she has to get Isaac's help. So, in verse 46, Rebekah says to Isaac, "I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob takes a wife for the daughters of Heth like these are the daughters of the land, what good is my life to me?" And what she's thinking of, in part, is Esau's example. So if you'll turn here, just a page or two back, to Genesis 26. And here, in Genesis 26, verse 34, we read, "And when Esau was 40 years old, he took his wives, Judith and Basemath, the daughters of the Hittite." And it says they were a grief of spirit to Isaac and Rebekah. They were not pleased at all. And they certainly didn't want Jacob to do this. So this is a good excuse to get Jacob out. So Isaac calls Jacob in Genesis 28, verse 1, blesses him, tells him he's not to take a wife for the daughters of Canaan. "Arise, go to the house of your mother's father, and take a wife from there, and may God Almighty bless you." You notice, Isaac realizes in verses 3 and 4 that indeed the blessing is to come upon Jacob. He accepts it full bore. So he sent Jacob away, and Jacob obeyed his father and his mother in verse 7. So out he goes. And we know that he came upon a certain place in verse 11, and we read this before, where God appears to him, promises him that he's going to be with him, and bring him back. So now let's start out with Jacob on his journey. Chapter 29 and verse 1. "Then Jacob moved on and went to the land of the sons of the east." Now the Hebrew reads a little differently, and it is interesting. It's kind of funny in a way. It doesn't say Jacob journeyed on. It says, "He lifted up his feet." Well, how else would you move? Remember, these are not the days of Dionne Warwick with the boats and planes and trains. He didn't have a plane or a train, didn't have a motorcycle, didn't have a bicycle. He didn't even have a donkey. But he had two strong legs and feet, so he lifts them up, and he takes a hike. Now, mind you, this hike is from Beersheba in the south of the land of Judea, clear up, we're going through Syria, we're going through Lebanon, up the Fertile Crescent, and down. This is quite a hike. But when he gets there, verse 2, "A well was in the field, and flocks of sheep were there. And Jacob said to the men, 'My brethren, where are you from?' 'We're from Haran.' 'Do you know Laban, the mother of Nahar? And they said, 'We know him.' And he said to them, 'Is he well?' They said, 'He is well.'" Something of interest. At that time in the development of the Hebrew language, there was no word for yes. Don't ask me why. I have no idea. But there was no word for yes. And that'll tell you why they answered the way they did. Remember, "Do you know Laban?" And they said, "We know him." Well, couldn't they say yes? They didn't have a word for yes. And he said, "Is he well?" And they said, "He is well." Why couldn't they say yes? No word for yes. Interesting. And he's, well, behold, his daughter Rachel comes with the sheep. Now, this is something very interesting in the Hebrew. Rachel, or Rachel, means ewe, female sheep. Now, what kind of a sound does a female sheep make, or does any sheep make? Baa, 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 the bleating of sheep, right? The Hebrew word for come, now, if you were a Hebrew reading this, listening to this aloud, you would laugh, you would chuckle. My reading it in English means nothing to me. But if you read it in Hebrew and think in Hebrew, it's funny. The Hebrew word for come, Rachel comes, the masculine form is ba. The feminine form is ba'a. So in Hebrew, Rachel, the female sheep, ba'as. And it is cute in the Hebrew. Likewise, if you'll come down here, Rachel came with the father's sheep, and it says that in verse 11, Jacob kissed Rachel, lifted up his voice and wept, and also above there watered the sheep. Now, the Hebrew word for water and to kiss, the same word. The consonants are the same. Only the vowel pointing is different. And anytime you see a Hebrew word, two Hebrew words with the same consonants, they're similar. It's talking about water, moisture, saliva, and there's your connection. And it was often said, be careful how you pronounce these words, or else you're liable to say, Jacob kissed the sheep and watered Rachel. So be careful how you pronounce the Hebrew. Anyway, we go down to verse 13. It comes to pass, Laban heard the news and welcomes him. And in verse 15, Laban says, because you're my kinsman, should you serve me for nothing? What shall be your wages? Laban had two daughters. Now, we know the story. It's love at first sight. Jacob is in love with Rachel. I'll serve you for 7 years for Rachel. So Laban says in verse 19, well, it's better I give to you than someone else. So, okay. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him a few days for the love he had for her. Verse 20. Now this phrase, a few words. Come back with me, if you will, just a couple of pages, to Genesis 27, at the bottom of page 145. This is where Rebecca is telling Jacob, leave, go, in verse 44, and stay with him a few days. This is the same Hebrew phrase, a few days. And it's to indicate a short period of time. Unfortunately for Rebecca, she had no way of knowing these few days would be a lifetime, because she was never going to see him again. The price she paid for helping to trick Esau. Just one of the tragedies of life. That, of course, just an aside. Now back we come to Genesis 29. Finally, he served for 7 years. Laban gathered together in verse 22 the men of the place and made a wedding feast. And so Jacob is rejoicing. He's going to go into Rachel that night and enjoy the night with her. Wrong. Oh, this Laban is a shyster. Is he ever a swindler? As it is said, the biggest crook in the East. He slips in Leah. Now, why Jacob didn't see it or know it, I have no idea. Except it was dark and the wine must have been flowing. Oh, the wine must have been flowing that he could not tell the difference. But he couldn't. So, Jacob is angry. He says in verse 25, what is this you have done to me? Did I not serve you for Rachel? Why then have you tricked me? Now this is God at work. Really. Did not Jacob trick Esau? I'm sorry, as well as Isaac? Yes. And you're going to see through the rest of this morning how God step by step is going to bring Jacob down this way. Jacob is still God's servant. God loves Jacob. And he's going to make him a powerful prince. But he's got to work on Jacob. Laban says, well, it must not be done this way in our country. Oh, yeah, sure, Laban. We know. Fulfill her week, and we will give you this one also. So verse 28, Jacob did so and fulfilled her week. Then Laban gave Rachel, his daughter, to Jacob as his wife also, as well as Bilhah, the handmaid. Jacob went in unto Rachel, and he loved Rachel more than Leah. Now Laban, think of it this way. Laban is getting 14 years of free service out of Jacob. He's marrying his daughters off. He has complete control of everything, all the wealth. Such a deal, this Laban. Well, we're not going to read over the rest of chapter 29 because this comes with, you know, the disputes and the jealousies of sisters, and we don't need to go into that. The same thing is true of chapter 30. You'll go through here, Rachel and Leah and so forth, and the children that are born. Finally, though, Jacob says to Laban in verse 25 of chapter 30, "Send me away that I may go to my own place and to my country. Give me my wives and my children." In 27, verse 27, Laban says, "I pray you, if I have found favor in your eyes, stay." Now here, Laban speaks the truth. "I have learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me because of you." Laban understands that. Like down in Egypt, Potiphar and Joseph, when God was with Joseph, Laban knows there's a connection between God and Joseph. In his own crooked way, he understands it. So he says, "What shall be your wages? What shall I give you?" And then Jacob says, and you can read from verse 31 on, is the contract. We're not going to spend much time on it, except to say that certain types of flocks will be mine, certain will be yours. But look at the crook that Laban is. And verse 35, In that day, Laban secretly took out the he-goats that were striped and spotted, and all the she-goats that were speckled and spotted, every one that had white in it, and all the black from among the lambs, and gave them to the hand of his sons. Well, this was the type of flock that would belong to Jacob. So Laban is conniving to give Jacob the weak and the ones he shouldn't have. But God revealed to Jacob genetics and breeding techniques. And you will read the breeding techniques as you go through. In fact, look at verse 12 of chapter 31, just across the page. In verse 11, "The angel of God spoke to me in a dream," Jacob is saying. "Lift up your eyes and see the lambs which sleep upon the flock that are striped, speckled, and spotted." We don't have the full story here, but God revealed to Jacob techniques of breeding as well as techniques of genetics. You know the story. If you have a black cow, a white cow, you cross them, get one black, one white, and two spotted, two speckled. Well, Jacob understood that, and he was able to separate them and breed them accordingly. So what was the result in verse 43 of Genesis 30? "The man increased exceedingly, had many flocks, camels, donkeys." And in verse 1 of 31, of chapter 31, "And he heard the words of Laban's son, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's." So now it's time for Jacob to leave. Finally, it is God who says it. God tells him it is time to leave in verse 3. "The Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred, and I will be with you." So to make a long story short, Jacob heads back secretly. Doesn't tell Laban that he's leaving. Laban, of course, hears about it and is in hot pursuit. In verse 19, we find out that Rachel stole the house idols, which were her father's. Now, I believe that there's a specific reason why she took those house idols, and it wasn't to worship them. There is another reason. I don't believe she was worshiping these gods. Anyway, Laban overtakes Jacob, but you will notice that when, in verse 25, Laban overtook Jacob, but God came to him and said, in essence, "Laban, you say neither good nor bad to Jacob." In other words, "You watch your tongue. Jacob is my man. Be careful." And he blusters. And they go about trying to find the house idols. Can't find them. Then they make this pact. And you can read about the pact in verses 44 through 55. But notice one particular verse here. This is, I think, gives us the key to why Rachel stole those house idols. This heap is a witness, in verse 52. And the pillar is a witness that I, Laban, will not pass over this heap to you, and that you will not pass over this heap and this pillar to me for harm. What kind of harm? Well, scholars have found, at least they say they found, evidence that house idols were not merely idols of worship or objects of worship, but they were deeds of possession. If you had certain idols with markings on them, that was the deed to your land, to your assets. Now, if, by the way, though, I do have to ring the cowbell here, this is not absolute. You know, scholars think this and scholars think that, and who knows if they're really right. But they say it. Well, if it is true, think of what that would mean. As long as Laban's alive, his lands are safe. What happens when he dies and later on Jacob, or if he's still alive, or his sons go back across the land and say, hey, you know, your dad lost this to my dad in the poker game. We have the title to your lands. They could take over. So that is why he says, you'll not pass over this heap and this pillar to me for harm. And I believe that to really be the case. They weren't worshiping them. It was worth the land. Anyway, that's the end of chapter 31. Now, in chapter 32, Jacob, of course, is being prepared to meet Esau, his brother. And he's afraid of Esau, his brother. And he says in four verses, he offers a prayer to God, which when I first read it years ago, I was incredibly moved by it. It is one of the most moving prayers I ever read. And it's only four verses long. And it begins in chapter 32, verse 9. And you will get the feel of Jacob, his mind, how he thinks. And he is being humbled. And what does he say? Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, the Lord who said to me, return to your country and to your kindred, and I will deal well with you. I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which you have done to your servant. For with my staff I passed over this Jordan, and now I have become two bands, mighty, strong. When I had my staff, I had nothing. You have given me everything. And you said, in verse 12, I will surely do you good and make your seed as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. You know, may we all pray that way. An amazing, humble prayer of Jacob. Well, he lodged that night, verse 13. He's dividing up the bands to meet Jacob, to meet Esau. And then comes the famous wrestling match. Verse 24 of chapter 32. Jacob was left alone. A man wrestled there with him until the daybreak. And when the man saw that he did not prevail against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh. And the hollow of Jacob's thigh became out of joint as he wrestled. And he said, let me go, for the day breaks. Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. And he blessed, and he said to him, what is your name? He said, Jacob, Yaakov in the Hebrew. He said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, Israel, the mighty El. For you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. Then in verse 30, Jacob called the place called Peniel, which is face of God. For I have seen God face to face, Peniel El Peniel, and my life is preserved. This was God in human form, limiting himself, and Jacob would not let go. This is, if there's any one word that you can think of when you hear the name Jacob and think of his character, it is perseverance. It is steadfastness. He would not give up. May we be as strong as Jacob was. And how many men do you know of whom it is said he struggled with God and men and have prevailed? This Jacob is a very, very important man and becomes even more important. So in chapter 33, he lifts up his eyes. Esau's coming. And lo and behold, Esau's forgotten it. Esau has land and cattle and sheep. And he says, forget it, my brother. Don't worry about it. And they make up. There's peace. But tragedy is going to strike him again. Chapter 34. Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she bore to Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. Well, she might have gone out to see the daughters of the land, but she certainly wound up seeing one of the men of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, prince of the county, saw her, he took her and lay with her and defiled her. So Jacob, in a sense, loses the virginity of his own daughter. And you know the story about what Simeon and Levi did in the circumcision of the men of the land, killed them. We're just passing over this because it's not pertaining to Jacob as much. Until we get to chapter 35, God said to Jacob, arise, go up to Bethel and live, make an altar there. Verse 2, Jacob said to his household and to all that were with him, put away the strange gods among you, be clean, change your garments. And they gave up all their strange gods in verse 4. And as they're moving on, almost the worst thing that could have ever happened to Jacob occurs. His beloved Rachel dies in childbirth. And as she's dying, she says in verse 18, and it came to pass, as her soul was departing, for she died, that she called his name Benoni, but his father called him Benjamin. Benoni means son of my sorrow, because she knows she's dying. Jacob says, Binyamin, son of my right hand. And we will never hear Jacob use the name Rachel again until shortly before his death, while he's speaking to Joseph in Egypt. And the way he speaks of Rachel, we'll see. He remembered her. And actually, he only had her for a short period of time. Remember, Jacob lives 147 years. He spends 7 years working for Rachel, then another 7 years he has her, 6 more years in Laban's land, that's maybe 13, 14, and she dies within a year. So he might have had her for only 15 years. Rebekah and Isaac were together for at least 60. Jacob didn't have her for that long. It's a tragedy. At any rate, in verse 19, Rachel died, buried on the way, Jacob set up a pillar upon her grave. Then we find that Jacob finally comes to Isaac. He's home. He finally made it home. And he came to his father Isaac. In verse 29, Isaac expired and died and was gathered to his people, old and full of days. Now from this, you might get the feeling that he died shortly thereafter. No, 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 no. Let's get a little bit of a time frame. Isaac lived 180 years. We know that. It says so right here. The days of Isaac were 180 years. Jacob lives 147 years. Remember, Isaac was 60 when Jacob was born. Well, that leaves him 120 years. Jacob lives 147. So he lives 27 years after Isaac dies. And of those 27 years, 17 were spent in Egypt, the last 17, which means he spent only 10 years in the land of Canaan before going down to Egypt. Now remember, Joseph is 17 when he's sold into slavery into Egypt. He spends 13 years there in Potiphar's house and in prison. Then another 7 years during the years of plenty. Pharaoh makes him ruler of Egypt. He says, only in the throne will I be greater than you. Otherwise, he, for all practical purposes, is Pharaoh. He says, nobody shall move without your permission. So there's 13 years plus 7 plus 1 or 2 more years until the famine strikes until Jacob comes down to Egypt. That's roughly 22 years, which means that of those 22 years, Isaac was still alive for at least 12 of them. So while Joseph was still in Egypt, Isaac was still alive. Doing what? Living his life. Just like we read the story of Isaac and Rebekah, Abraham is alive for many more years. But you have to realize the Bible is written in such a way by God that telling the story, telling us what we need to know. And once he's through with that part of the story, he moves on. Forget Abraham. He's going to live out his life and eventually die. Well, Isaac's going to live out his life and eventually die. But God says, Isaac's done his part. Abraham's done his part. They're blessed. They're going to be in my kingdom. Now we got to focus on the new part. So we're focusing on Jacob. We're focusing on Joseph in Egypt. But Isaac is still very much alive. Now, I don't know. His eyes were dim. Was Jacob taking care of him? Probably. My guess. I don't know. But as far as God is concerned, what's Mike, it's not important that you know what happened with Isaac. It's important for you to know what's happening with Jacob and Joseph. So just a little tidbit that the Bible is not always written chronologically. And you think that this happens, and then it's going like this, like this. It's not. It's going this, then it's going back, going forward, and going back. And you just have to realize that. Well, anyway, tragedy is again going to strike. Because, you see, Joseph is the favorite son of Jacob. Oh, we know that. In chapter 37, verse 3. Israel loved Joseph more than all his sons, because he was a son of his old age, and he made him a tunic reaching to the soles of his feet. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him. And here come the dreams. And he dreamed about the sun and the moon and the sheaves. But you'll notice what happens, what his father says. And he told it to his father and to his brothers. And his father rebuked him, verse 10. What is this dream that you have dreamed? His brothers were jealous, in verse 11, but his father was mindful. Jacob knew about dreams. God appeared to him many times in dreams. So Jacob is thinking, something's up. I don't know what, but something is up. He knew. Now about this tunic. This is the famous coat of many colors. And I remember trying to visualize, well, orange, red, green, blue. Well, what is it? It's not. It was a tunic of pointed sleeves. And if scholars are correct, and I have to say, if they're correct, I think they are, but I can't prove it. Again, cowbell. When you wanted to designate your heir apparent, the ruler of your clan, you gave him a tunic of pointed sleeves. Now, that is enough to make his brothers jealous with rage. Now, is that absolutely true? I don't know. But nevertheless, scholars have pointed out that it was common in those days, in that part of the world, for a father who was old and looking for an heir apparent was going to give a tunic of pointed sleeves. Well, we know the story. They kidnap Joseph, sell him to Egypt. You notice here in verse 31 of chapter 37, they took Joseph's tunic, killed the kid of the goats, dipped it in blood, and took it to their father, Jacob. And it's interesting. Notice how they ask the question. Verse 32, do you know whether it is your son's coat or not? Why don't they ask, is this our brother's coat? They're not even affiliating him as their brother. They're saying, your son, not our brother, your son. Interesting the way they phrase it. In verse 33, and he knew it. It is my son's tunic. An evil beast has eaten him. Joseph is without doubt torn in pieces, and he's mourning. His sons and daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused. I will go down to the grave unto my son mourning, and his father wept for him. Now, Joseph isn't dead. We know that. But after all, didn't Jacob trick Esau with clothes and skins? He certainly did. Karma, you know, what goes around comes around. When I say to you, brethren, God's at work, I mean it. I'm serious. God's at work. And what Jacob did to others, coming back on him. Now, God is going to raise up Jacob, absolutely. But Jacob is learning. He doesn't fully understand yet, but he will. So Jacob thinks he's lost his son. Now remember, Joseph was the closest thing he had to raise. And he's lost him. Well, not really, but he thinks he has. Bit by bit, God is stripping Jacob of everything that Jacob holds dear. Remember the words of a teacher who once said, he who is not worthy or is willing to give a father, mother, sister, brother, and even his own life is not worthy of me. Jacob's going to have to be brought to that point, and he will. Well, 38 is an inset chapter. We're not interested in that. That's Judah and Tamar. And in verse chapter 39, talks about Joseph and Potiphar. Well, we're not interested so much in that. But what we are going to come to is that there's famine in the land. We know that. And in chapter 42 of verse 1, Jacob realizes that there's famine. And there's food in Egypt. Go down, buy us some food. Of course, by this time, Joseph is ruler of Egypt. And in verse 7, Joseph sees his brothers. He knew them, but he remained a stranger to them. He's going to put them to the test. And he says, you're spies, in verse 9. You've come to see the nakedness of the land. Not so, but Joseph knows this, but he's toying with them. And they said, we're all one man's sons. We're honest men. We're not spies. And Joseph said to them, it is I spoke to them, you are spies, but this you shall be proved. Send for your other son, because Joseph asked about her father and his other son, Benjamin. So he keeps Simeon. He sends back the rest of them, but he puts the money that they gave him back in their sacks. And in verse 28, they're opening their sacks, and one says to the other, my silver has been put back in my sack. Their heart sank. What is this? They came to Jacob. And they told him all that had happened. And notice what Jacob says in verse 36. And I call this, and a couple of other verses, the anguish of Jacob. Jacob, their father, said to them, you have bereaved me. Joseph is no more. Simeon is no more. And you will take Benjamin? All these things are against me. Woe is me! Why me? Why are these things happening to me? This is the force of the Hebrew. Jacob is being brought down. Does this sound like the cocky young Jacob who said to Esau, sell me your birthright? Oh, no, 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 no. This is a beaten down man. Still a servant of God, still persevering, but no more longer the cocky individual, proud and confident that he once was. Oh, God is working with him. Believe me, God is working with him. And then Reuben, rash Reuben, verse 37. Reuben spoke to his father, saying, kill my two sons if I don't bring him back to you. Deliver him to my hand. And Jacob says, oh, shut up, Reuben. In essence, is what he's saying. My son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he is left alone. And if mischief should happen to him by the way you go, then you shall bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to the grave. He's hanging on to Benjamin, but you know, God is going to force him to be willing to even give up Benjamin. The last item, the last person of real importance to him, he's going to have to be willing to give up, just as we have to give up everything for Christ, God, and the kingdom. Verse 1 of chapter 43. The famine was severe in the land. It came to pass when they had eaten the grain, and they said, go again, buy us some food. And Judah spoke to him. The man solemnly protested to us, saying, you shall not see my face until your brother is with you. We will not go down. And Israel said, why have you dealt ill with me to tell the man whether you had yet a brother? You see Jacob's anguish? And they say, well, he asked us, do we have a father? Do we have a brother? Well, of course, Joseph knew. Joseph knew. Finally, Judah says to his father, and here's Judah coming to the fore, calm, staid. Send the boy with me. We will arise and go so that we may live and not die. Both we and you and our little ones, I will be surety for him. You shall require of my hand if I do not bring him to you. Father Israel, father, their father says, if it be so, do this. Take of the best and take the money that was in your hands. Arise, also your brother. Verse 13. And finally in verse 14, he says, and God Almighty give you mercy before the man. And then what does he say? The last phrase of verse 14. If I am bereaved, then I am bereaved. Put another way, if I am to lose everything, I will lose everything. If I have to give up everything I have, I give up everything I have. That is the point that God wanted Jacob to come to. And finally, he's there. So they go down. They meet Joseph again. You can read it in the end of chapter 43 and verse 44. And they make this big feast, and Benjamin has five times the portion of everybody else. I'm just passing it over for time constraints here. But then the Egyptian Joseph told the steward, put my special cup in Benjamin's sack. Because Joseph has something in mind. They leave, the Israelites leave, they're traveling up, but Joseph's servant overtakes them. And they're going to search the sacks to see where this cup is. And they found it in Benjamin's sack, verse 12. And in verse 10 they said, now also let it be according to your, he with whom it is shall be my servant, and you shall be blameless, the servant says to Jacob's sons. And when they found it, they tore their clothes, and each one loaded his donkey and returned to the city. And Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house. Joseph says, okay, I'll let you all go, but the young one stays with me. Well, Judah cannot have that. He can't. He gave his word. He promised his father, saying, I will be surety for him. So what does Judah say? Yeah, you want to talk about diplomacy. Talk about a moving plea. This is it. He said, oh, my Lord, pray let your servant speak a word to my Lord's ears, verse 18. Do not let your anger burn against your servant, for you are even as Pharaoh. My Lord asked his servant, saying, do you have a father or brother? And we answered, my Lord, we do, yes. You said to your servants, bring him down to me, verse 21. And we said to my Lord, the boy cannot leave his father, for if he should leave his father, he would die. And you said to your servants, unless your youngest brother comes, you won't see my face. And it came to pass when we came to your servant, my father, we told him the words. He said, go buy some more food. We said we cannot go down unless the brother comes with us. Finally, come down to verse 30. And now, when I come to your servant, my father, and the boy is not with us, since his life is bound up with the lad's life, it shall be, when he sees that the boy is not with us, he will die. And your servants will bring down the gray hairs of your servant, our father, with sorrow to the grave. For your servant became surety, that is he, Judah, saying, if I do not bring him to you, then I shall bear the blame to my father forever. And now, please, let your servant remain instead of the boy as a slave to my Lord. Now, remember, it was Judah who suggested they sell Joseph. Again, what goes around can come around. The way these things happen, it's real. Now, it doesn't happen that way, but Judah is brought to the point where he is willing to be a slave. And believe me, that took a lot for Judah to say. And now, please, let your servant remain instead of the boy, and let the boy go up. For how shall I go to my father, and the boy is not with me, lest perhaps I see the evil that will befall my father? Now, at that point, Joseph loses it. He can't take it anymore. He says, get out of here, all the Egyptians. He reveals himself to his family, to his brothers. And they are stunned. They are stupefied, to use that word. Joseph says, you know, in verse 7, God sent me before you to preserve you for a remnant in the earth. You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. So anyway, he rejoices with them. He says, now you go up and bring my father down. And he sent his brothers away, verse 24. They departed. He said, don't quarrel along the way. Don't argue. Just get up there. And they told him, Jacob, Joseph is still alive. He is governor over all the land of Egypt. And Jacob's heart fainted, for he did not believe them. But they told him all the words of Joseph. And he saw the wagons. And Israel said, it is enough. Joseph, my son, is alive. I will go and see him before I die. But Jacob has one last thing he has to do before he goes down to Egypt. Remember, in the days of Isaac, this famine, and Isaac didn't know whether he should go into Egypt or not. What did God tell Isaac? Don't go to Egypt. Stay in this land. Jacob is fearful. Should he go to Egypt? God had said before, don't. So what does he need to do? He needs to ask God. He just doesn't rush down. Chapter 46, verse 1. And Israel took his journey with all that he had, came to Beersheba, and offered sacrifices. And God spoke to Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob, here am I. I am God, the God of your fathers. Do not fear to go down to Egypt. Don't worry what I said to Isaac many years ago, for I will make of you a great nation. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also surely bring you up again. And Joseph himself shall put his hand to close your eyes. So Jacob rose up, went down, met Joseph. What a reunion they had. And finally, Joseph brings Jacob to Pharaoh. And notice what Jacob says to Pharaoh. Well, first of all, in verse 47, chapter 47, Joseph came and told Pharaoh and said that my father, my brothers, and my flocks are here, and they're in the land of Goshen. And Pharaoh said to the brothers, what's your occupation? And they said, your servants are shepherds. Well, go be over my land. Be over my sheep and cattle. Pharaoh's thinking, if this Joseph can make me this much wealth, wow, what can the rest of his family do for me? Pharaoh's no fool. He knows this is a unique family. He's all for it. He says, verse 6, the land of Egypt is before you. Make your father and brothers to live in the best of the land, in the land of Goshen. And if you know any of ability among them, make them overseers of livestock. Yes, make me many more cattle and sheep and goats. Come on, Pharaoh's no dummy. Anyway, Pharaoh asked Jacob in verse 7. First of all, Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Jacob, how many are the years of your life? Now listen and read in verse 9 how Jacob sums up his life. Jacob said to Pharaoh, the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. Few and evil have been the years of my life, and I have not attained to the number of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their pilgrimage. Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out. When Jacob says few and evil, first he means his life is not as long as his father's were. And when he says evil, he doesn't mean fiendish, ghoulish. He doesn't mean like experiencing the deeds of a Hitler or a Stalin or an Attila the Hun. The word evil means ra. It also means calamity, hardship, pain, anguish, grief, all of that. And what he's saying is, my life has been full of anguish and pain and grief. Oh, there have been good times, to be sure, but he is humbled. He is brought to the point where he doesn't see himself as some great success. He sees himself, in a way, as somewhat of a failure. Oh, he's alive. He's seen Joseph now. He's got this reunion. But he's just not that brash, cocky, gonna conquer the world Jacob that we read about 2-3 decades before. But Jacob is not going to die yet. He's got 17 more years to live. Why? God has something else in mind for Jacob to say and do. Notice what Jacob says to Joseph. Beginning in verse 28 of chapter 47. Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. And the days of Jacob, the years of his life, were 147. We discussed that in Isaac and his life and in the little graph. And the time drew near for Israel to die. And he called his son Joseph and said to him, if now I have found grace in your sight, please put your hand under my thigh, deal kindly and truly with me. Do not bury me in Egypt. so that I may sleep with my fathers, you shall carry me out of Egypt and bury me in their burial site. He said, swear to me. And he swore to him. And then afterwards, someone told Joseph, your father's sick. This is in chapter 48. Jacob appeared to Joseph. And Jacob said to Joseph, God Almighty appeared to me. Now this is the famous El Shaddai. And I don't know if any of you have heard Amy Grant sing the song El Shaddai. Oh, moving song. Jacob talks about El Shaddai as though he's right there. El Shaddai is close to Jacob, and Jacob is close to El Shaddai. At any rate, he says to him, God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me. And he said to me, behold, I will make you fruitful and multiply you, and I will make of you a multitude of people, and will give this land to your seed, to you for an everlasting possession. And now your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, who are born to you in the land of Egypt, before I came to you in Egypt, are mine, like Reuben and Simeon. They are mine. And what he is saying is, Joseph, you're their father. I know that. But in blessing them and in possession, they belong to me and will be a direct grandchildren of Rachel. So in part, he's honoring Rachel this way. And my blessings, which I am blessed with by God, I pass on to them. And they indeed became the two greatest nations, empires in the history of the world. God has promised Jacob, but this is done through Jacob. So you see, God had purpose for Jacob. That's how God is transmitting it. Jacob is a fascinating man. And we know more about his life than any other figure in the Old Testament. It's all laid out for us. And here is where he mentions Rachel for the last time. And as far as we know, it is not recorded that he mentioned her name any place else. He said here in verse 7, and as for me, when I came from Paddan, Rachel died beside me in the land of Canaan, when there was still but a little way to come. And I buried her there in the way of Ephrath, that is Bethlehem. And when he said, Rachel died beside me, the Hebrew implies unto me, near me, with me, to my sorrow. Jacob, in a way, is emotionally involved here. This was his, if I can say it emotionally, his beloved Rachel. So, it's a poignant reminder. I don't think Jacob ever forgot Rachel. Never. So anyway, in verse 8, Israel beheld Joseph's sons and said, who are these? Joseph says to his father, they're my sons that God's given me. Well, Israel's eyes were dim, kind of like Isaac's eyes were dim in those days. So he couldn't quite recognize them. And Israel said to Joseph, I had not thought I would see your face, and lo, God shows me your offspring. So then comes the blessing itself. Joseph puts Ephraim toward Israel's right hand and Ephraim toward the left. But Jacob is having none of it. He crosses his hands. Joseph sees it and says, no, no, no. In verse 17, Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand on Ephraim and it displeased him. He held up the hand of Jacob. He said, don't do this. And Jacob refused and said, I know it, my son. I know it. He also shall become a people, and he also shall be great. But truly, his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his seed shall become a multitude of nations. And Joseph, although he was practically Pharaoh in Egypt, backs off. This is his father. And Joseph respects his father. And Joseph knows his father has a relationship with God. So he backs off. He's bowing himself. Jacob does the blessing. And the blessing is sure. And now we come to practically the last chapter in Jacob's life. Chapter 49, verse 1. Jacob called to his sons and said, "Gather yourselves together, that I may tell you what shall befall you in the last days." And you can read the rest of it all the way down. And finally he finishes, and in verse 29, he charged them, Jacob, "I am to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre, in the land of Canaan, the field which Abraham bought from Ephron the Hittite for a burial site. They buried Abraham and Sarah, and they buried Isaac and Rebekah." So you see, Rebekah's there, buried with Isaac. Although, when Jacob came back from Laban, nothing is said of Rebekah. She had died in the meantime. Abraham and Isaac are buried there. Abraham and Sarah are buried there, and then Isaac and Rebekah. And I buried Leah there. So before he came down to Egypt, he buries Leah. So think, in his life, he lost father, he lost mother, he lost both wives, and you know, he thought he almost lost Joseph. "The field was purchased, and the cave in it from the sons of Heth. When Jacob finished commanding his sons, he drew his feet up into the bed and expired, and was gathered to his people." Well, all I can say is, what a way to go. When you're going out, "My job is finished, I'm through," gathered up his feet, lay down, and that was it. In a way, like Moses on top of the mountain. His job was finished, God blessed him, let him see the land, and that was it. But a few last verses, Joseph fell upon his father's face, wept upon him, kissed him. Joseph goes to Pharaoh and says, "My father made me swear to take him up and bury him. Please, may I go up and bury him? I will come back." Pharaoh says, "Go up, bury your father, according as he has made you swear." So they do. And verse 12, "His sons did to him according as he commanded them, for his sons buried him in the cave of the field of Machpelah, which Abraham bought with the field for a burying place." And so that ends our saga of Jacob. Now, there's a lot more to Jacob. There really is. But we don't have time for it. You could spend days and days. And what I like so much about the book of Genesis, not that I don't look like the rest of the Bible, I certainly do. Believe me, I do. Is that there is so much interplay between human beings in this book. Oh, and the prophets, "Thus saith the Lord, and God commanded this, and he gave his law," and you have the teachings of Jesus and the disciples and the congregations, and all that is true. But you have so much interplay, so much emotion, so much made dealings between different people, from Abraham clear on down. It is fascinating in the book of Jacob. So anyway, I hope you have found it of some interest, and it has been my pleasure to present this story about what I call a man named Jacob.